My guest at this time is Andrew C. McCarthy. He's a former federal prosecutor who led the successful effort to convict the blind sheikh and his associates for the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and for plans to attack other landmarks in the New York City area. He is now a contributing editor and columnist for National Review Online. He joins me now to discuss the latest revelations of foreign influence in the 2016 elections. And for the past several days, that news has put the spotlight on Democrats. In recent days, reports have determined that the Clinton campaign and the DNC paid for the now infamous and suspect Trump dossier that was compiled by a former British agent who worked closely with Russian officials to put it together. We've also seen reports that the Mueller investigation, the special counsel, is now looking at the Podesta Group as part of his probe. That, of course, very closely tied to the Clinton campaign as well, since John Podesta was at the very head of that campaign. So a lot to sort through here. And Andy, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Greg.
Well, let's talk first of all about the legal significance of what we learned in this Washington Post story that broke on Tuesday, and that's that this dossier, which has been largely discredited, but nonetheless, it was funded, at least in part, by the Clinton campaign and the DNC. How does this change the game?
Well, it certainly goes to the credibility of the source. As you point out, Greg, it's said that some of the dossier is discredited. I prefer to think of it as unverified because we really don't know, what they've been able to corroborate and what they haven't. There have been allegations by some of the people who are named in it that the stuff about them is false, but we don't know, what the FBI has done in the way of running that down or not. But what we now know is that the source of all this, meaning to the extent that it was funded, were obviously opponents of Donald Trump. It was apparently initially a Republican outfit or rival of Trump's that started this ball rolling. And then apparently in around April or so of 2016, the effort was taken up by the Clinton campaign and the DNC through a law firm called Perkins Coie, which retained Fusion GPS, the research outfit that that actually put the dossier together. I think the law firm is worth dwelling on because, as I noted at National Review this morning, that law firm, Perkins Coie, is the same law firm that retained CrowdStrike, which is the outfit, the cybersecurity outfit that examined the Democrat National Committee servers when they learned that they were hacked, also around April of 2016. I just think it's a very interesting coincidence that these two scandals seem to be colliding at this point.
Well, one of the things we certainly heard from the left and elsewhere when there was the story about Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort and others from the campaign meeting with the Russians in June of 2016, and it turned out to not be what they thought it was. It turned out to be more about the Magnitsky Act and adoption and that sort of thing, and attempted collusion for trying to receive opposition research, basically. And the argument we're hearing from the old Clinton campaign people like Brian Fallon and others is that, oh, this is just opposition research. I wish I had known about it. I would have proclaimed it from the rooftops. And I hope if a shred of this is true, it was all worth it to shine the light on Donald Trump. So were they wrong about collusion in the meeting from the summer of 2016? Or if they were right about that, is this also meeting that same definition?
Well, look, I think that the problem that Trump had back with respect to this Trump Tower meeting wasn't so much that they were doing opposition research. I mean, granted, the media acts horrified to hear that Trump would be doing opposition research on Hillary. And it, with respect to this story about the dossier, we're now supposed to see it as politics as usual. So there is a double standard in the coverage. But I think the biggest problem the Trumps had was that they weren't forthcoming about the reason for the meeting. So when they were originally asked about it, actually, they originally said there had never been any such meeting. And then when it turned out there was a meeting, they said it was about one thing. And then when it turned out that the New York Times had their emails, they came clean about what the meeting was about. So I think they had as much trouble with the way the story unfolded and the way they kind of changed their version of events to meet whatever the latest breaking news was than the fact that there was opposition research involved.
What do you see as the significance of Mueller, at least in part, turning his investigation towards the Podesta group and them not filing the proper paperwork for doing work on behalf of a foreign entity, in this case, the government of Ukraine? It appears that the Manafort trail ultimately led there. What does that tell you, if anything?
Well, I think probably three things. Number one, to start with the last thing you said, this clearly, to me at least, seems like it dovetails with what we knew to be the focus on Manafort, because there is that connection there. But the other things I think go to something we've been observing about this from the beginning, which is that it was a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation at the start. So what they're obviously looking at is the Russian meddling in the election and the different strands of potential Russian influence, which may be very interesting and very important to find out about, but at the same time may not signal that there's necessarily a criminal investigation, or at least a criminal set of charges coming as a result of that. And related to that, I've complained from the start that the Justice Department's regulations for appointing a special counsel require that you identify the crime that the special counsel has been retained to investigate, the crime that the Justice Department is, for whatever reason, conflicted from investigating. They didn't do that. And as a result, as I've been arguing from the beginning, by not doing that, they really didn't put any parameters on Mueller's jurisdictions. He's really got no limits. So it's really not surprising to see the investigation widen and broaden and now include, evidently, people who are out not only outside Trump's orbit, but were actually playing on the other team.
What do you see as the biggest questions going forward now on these two issues, or even perhaps broader in this investigation? And I guess maybe we can even wrap in the latest Uranium One revelations from the past week.
Yeah, what I think the biggest issue, Greg, is disclosure at this point. And I, for the life of me, don't understand why the Trump administration hasn't pushed that harder, because the executive branch, the president, is in charge of things like classified information and is in a position to make the FBI and the Justice Department be more forthcoming, for example, with these investigations by Congress. So I'd like to see a couple of things happen in the short term. Number one, I'd like to see testimony from this witness who's been identified as the informant in that Uranium One deal where Russia ended up getting 20% of our uranium reserves and the Clinton Foundation was grotesquely enriched. I think it's important to hear from him, because it now seems, not only seems, it's pretty clear that there was a racketeering investigation on the American arm of the Russian energy giant, the conglomerate Rosatom, that was the recipient of the American uranium reserve. So the question, of course, is how did it help the national security to allow Russia to acquire these reserves, but why was that allowed to be done when we had a pending, provable, prosecutable racketeering investigation on the outfit that was acquiring the reserves? And then I guess the other thing that's important is disclosure of what, if anything, the Justice Department represented to the FISA court about when it went to get what's been reported as FISA eavesdropping warrants on people who were connected to Donald Trump. Specifically, there's a claim that they've used information that was in this dossier, which we now know was paid for by Trump's opposition campaign, the Clinton campaign. The report is that they used information from that dossier in presenting their warrant application to the FISA court, and then they were given authority to do this eavesdropping. So that's not necessarily a scandal, as long as they corroborated whatever information from the dossier they used before they brought it to the court, And as long as they had a good faith reason to believe the people they wanted to surveil were actually acting as Russian agents. But if any of those things isn't true, that would be a big problem. And it would also be very useful to know what representations did they make about the source of the information that they got from the dossier, assuming that they did that as reported.
A lot to keep our eyes on, Andy, going forward. Thanks so much for your time, as always. And we should point out that Andy has also written a piece called When Scandals Collide that was just posted this morning at National Review Online. And, sir, as always, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Andrew C. McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, contributing editor and columnist at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.